our existence, opens our minds, our hearts to the goodness and beauty of the world around us, to the solidarity and friendship with our fellow human beings, to intimate communion with God Himself, in a love that goes beyond all limits of time and space, to eternal, unassailable happiness.
Good morning. Today's Best Catholic Radio, Channel 88.1 Productions, is proud to bring you John Paul the Great's Leaf Eaters Club, featuring liturgical calendar reminders, book reviews, and exciting author interviews. So sit back, pour another cup of coffee, and enjoy. Here now are your hosts, Terry Moran and John Lillis.
Good morning, dear people of God, and welcome to a brand new Friday morning and a live edition of John Paul the Great's Leaf Eaters Club on today's Best Catholic Radio, Channel 88.1 FM. And I am John Lillis, and she's Terry Moran. Terry, good morning to you.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I am better now that I'm in your company.
Well, I have missed Leaf Eaters. I've missed you in a busy, busy month of May.
It has been not the same without you.
I'm sure. But Martha, give a big shout out to Martha. She did such a wonderful job interviewing Karen Edmondson and Lisa Henney.
Doing the yeoman's work in your absence.
She was wonderful. I listened to the shows when I got home. They were wonderful.
Well, you know, all we can do is say congratulations because, you know, she stepped in cold and did a nice job.
Yeah.
And, you know, this.
What a future she's got, huh?
At the end of the month, we'll have our one-year anniversary, Terry.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's exciting.
June 22nd, first show, premiere show.
Mm-hmm. Not that you reminded yourself of that, right? Well, we do need to pray, however, and we'd like to invite you to pray. If you would like to pray along with us, grab your bookmark that you may have. If you don't have one, please go to the Marian Center at Trinity Heights, you know, right up the hill at 33rd and Floyd here in Sioux City. Many of you listening from whatever area have traveled great distances to go. Stop in and see Terry or all the other lovely volunteers and get yourself a bookmark. If you don't have time to do that, stop in the station. We're at 705 Douglas Street, Suite 238, just right on the second floor. You can't miss us. But this morning, if you have a tablet, a smartphone, or a computer, please log on to fhcradio.com. And you can follow along right on the homepage with the station prayer. Terry, in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen.
Almighty Father, help us to love you with all our heart, mind, and strength. Please accept our offerings of our work, programs, and sacrifices, that all may listen, love, and share the beauty of thy church. May we always have a zeal for souls, one set ablaze in your love. Please allow us to grow in your grace and help others to turn to you, for your infinite mercy, and to dwell anew in the life of your sacraments. Amen.
And St. Gabriel, patron of Catholic Radio,
pray for us.
In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Amen. So it's kind of ordinary time, the eighth week.
Ordinary time. Where did the Easter season go, John?
Yes, I was getting used to the Regina Caeli on the radio at 6 noon and 6.
And now we are back to the Angelus, but that's such a beautiful prayer, too.
Yes, in honor of the greatest event in human history, by the way.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, think of the condescension of God to man, and the Word became flesh. That happened at the Annunciation, not at Christmas.
Correct. John, I haven't had my second cup of coffee yet.
I'm just sharing that with myself. I'm trying to, you know, we need to remind ourselves of this instance of... Anyway, the point being, now we're in ordinary time, which is nothing ordinary about it.
Church, it's always a gift in the church. Every day is a gift in the church. We get to celebrate the Eucharist, the body and blood of Christ, the source and summit of Christian life.
Yes. Well, today is speaking of which, did you know that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of faith? And I can't remember who said that. It was like Ignatius of Loyola or somebody like that.
I'm sure it was. We're celebrating a martyr today, John.
Yeah, St. Justin.
St. Justin, the martyr, and he is also a father of the church.
Yes.
And
he
was
a doctor or a father?
Father of the church.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, because he was so old. I mean, he's
old. You know, I don't know what constitutes. Someday we're going to have to ask Mark Shea that or Mike Aquilina what constitutes a doctor of the church and what makes the father of the church?
Well, I mean, he was born near Samaria in 100 AD. So the apostles had just passed away, basically, 20 years before, 30 years before.
Yeah, and he was a pagan. And he converted to Christianity, and he taught and defended the Christian religion in Asia Minor and at Rome, and that's where he suffered martyrdom, about the year 165.
Yes, and he never ended his quest for religious truth, even when he converted to Christianity, after studying various pagan philosophies. Huh.
You know, what a temptation that must have been in the life of the times after the apostles, right, with all the pagan philosophies around.
A lot of competitive views.
Yeah, really.
He studied Plato.
But he found that the Christian religion answered the great questions about life and existence better than the philosophers.
And now he's named the first Christian philosopher, and he combined Christianity with the best of Greek philosophy.
He did, and he was known as an apologist. And an apologist, for our listeners, is one who defends in writing the Christian religion against the attacks and misunderstandings of the pagans. And two of his apologies have come down to us, and they bear his name, and they also have one as Dialogue with the Jew Tryphon. And Leo XIII had a mass and office composed in his honor.
How about that?
And Justin was beheaded in Rome in 165.
Well, if you got to go, Terry, I'd say that's probably the way to go.
Being beheaded and not eaten by lions?
Yeah, because that was quick.
That was quick.
I mean, you do have a few minutes of repose while your head is off your body before you die, but, you know, but there was a guy, you know, in France. He was a real sick, twisted person. During the French Revolution, when they murdered the priests, he did a test, and he said to the subjects, you know, after we kill you, I want you to blink as long as you're conscious. And I think the guy that blinked the longest blink for something like 11 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
Is that crazy?
Oh, it is. And, you know, look at the martyrdom. It may not be for the faith today, but look at what's going on today in Syria. And that's just atrocious.
Well, you know, martyrdom has three flavors. You know, the typical martyr is just a witness. You know, like the bishop would be a martyr because he's the witness to the faith. But then there's a red martyr.
And then the dry martyr.
The dry martyr. Yeah. Right?
You know, and we are the dry martyrs.
Yeah. But I guess in the grand scheme of things, being a martyr is demanded by baptism. You know, and John Paul II extolled everyone. I just read this yesterday. He said that we all should pray for a red martyrdom, that would be our ultimate goal as Catholic Christians, is to die a red martyrdom, because it's coming to that point. Isn't that funny?
Well, you know,
and strange.
And look at it now, though. But look at it now. Look at, because Christians are being persecuted now. You know, I don't know how many of our listeners remember Monsignor Dean Walker. He died, oh, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. It was before your time, John. And he used to say Mass at the cathedral at noon very often. Wonderful scholar. And I remember him saying one noon Mass. You know, he was talking, I don't know which martyr he was talking about, which feast day it was, but he said, maybe you could die for the faith, but can you live for the faith? And isn't that interesting? Because do we stand up and defend our faith? And in these days, with everything going on with the Health and Human Service mandate and this abortion, gender, sex-related abortions, you know, can we stand up for the faith and really defend it? It takes a lot of courage and a lot of prayer.
It really does. So Justin had...
he had a lot of both.
He had a take on this. And as the patron of philosophers, he tries to instill in us an inspiration to use our natural gifts, our natural reason to figure things out. You know, a lot of people have lost the ability to think. We all do on occasion.
Well, with Twitter, you don't have to think. You just tweet now.
There's no thinking. It's just
tweeting.
There's
no thinking. It's just tweeting.
140 characters or less.
And that's it. That's all you're allowed to think.
I'm not a tweeter.
I'm not either, John.
I know some tweeters. They're still nice people.
They are. But we have a quote by Justin the Martyr.
Yes.
As we get off track here, we'll get back on track.
Yeah, we'll try.
Okay. Philosophy is the knowledge of that which exists and a clear understanding of the truth, and happiness is the reward of such knowledge and understanding.
And, you know, he also said, I believe in order to understand, and I understand in order to believe.
potent words. Let's keep that in mind.
Was he a Jesuit? No, he was. but it was
Jesuits weren't founded in 100 AD.
They were not.
They were not
founded in 1536.
And
or
you
7.
Would know that.
Well, I would actually. I produced a little thing that was on the radio yesterday about Ignatius of Loyola. They all decided to do it on top of a grassy hill after a long picnic lunch. He and his companions formed the Company of Jesus. They decided mm-hmm. that day. Isn't that interesting?
And they were going to be defenders of the faith and defenders of the Pope,
they
too.
They became that.
Wasn't that one of two of their charisms? Defenders of the faith and defenders of the Pope.
They became defenders of the Holy See, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Twice suppressed. And they're in a resurgence, though. You know
oh,
that.
They really are. They really, and look at all the schools they built.
Yeah,
and how many young people they educated.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt. Now, what else in the world of things is going on with you?
In the world of things with me, we have a wonderful author today, Dave, a prolific author. I gave you the sheet there, John.
I'm
he
about
has.
To get to it, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I don't even know how many books Dave has written, and he's also a blogger, so he's got a wonderful blog spot, and he'll tell us about that. I believe it's called Socrates Blogspot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and a lot of wonderful essays, a lot of wonderful thoughts. And so, but today he is going to talk to us about his book, The Wisdom of Chesterton. We haven't done anything on G.K. Chesterton on our program. So we need a resurgence of him. He was such a wise and witty gentleman.
I love the one-minute shorts that EWTN has produced over the years with
Dale
Alquist.
Yeah.
Well,
he's also got a half-hour show, too, doesn't he?
He does, but
yeah.
I rarely hear those.
Yeah.
But, it's just they're so pithy and amazingly clear.
Yeah, you have to stop for a minute and think, did I really hear that?
yeah, that's true. One of them is right now about being progressive, and it goes something like Chesterton said, well, progressive is the lamest word in the English language because no one agrees on where you're going, so how is it that you can measure progress? So you think about the progressive movement in America. I love that because we're not in agreement of where
we're
going.
He was a man for all times, wasn't he?
He was. He was quite a character. I did read biographical. We'll get into it probably today. He was a large man, very large man, carried a cane with a sword in it, had a fondness for the drink, and he would often sit in pubs and pontificate for hours on end and days and days and days. He had a love of his life, and he was a man's man, in short, mm-hmm. you know. He never was bullied by anyone, you know, because of his stature. And as I said, he had the sword inside of his cane in case there mm-hmm. was any thuggery. He took care of people. And isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and I think he's timeless. You know,
well, that's the thing about it. He spoke about such great truth, and truth itself is timeless.
It's timeless. So we're anxious
that's
to get
exciting.
Into that.
Dave Armstrong will be on here in just a few moments.
Yeah.
Formatically speaking, how are the shows shaping up for the rest of the summer?
We have got such an exciting lineup coming up. Next week, we've got Kelly Alquist with All Hearts of Fire program.
Oh, very nice.
She's from the Marian Helpers.
Okay.
And then later on, we will have Father Michael Gately back on again with his new book, 33 Days to Morning Glory, from which All Hearts of Fire is a parish-based program, which that is taken from.
Are we doing anything special on the anniversary show?
I believe we're having an encore on the anniversary show because I think my co-host is going to be on vacation.
Well, I might not be. I might actually push that off and go down to be with my Megan on her birthday.
Oh.
Because
we will do something special
for
the anniversary.
Well, it's just that, you know, we're going to try to pause feeding the flock for about 4 or 5 weeks and then come back 5 days a week. That'll
oh,
huh?
really? That's going to be wonderful.
Well, I hope so.
That is my favorite show on KFHC,
well,
Feeding the Flock.
So much. And, you know, we've had such great guests, and I think we'll expand the format. And my friend Sam Clovis from KSCJ has agreed to pop in from time to time. And
oh, good.
Won't that be good?
Well, you and Sam have such a nice camaraderie.
Yeah, we
and
do.
And your heads are just so, when they're put together, they just are so full of good knowledge.
And I have to defer. I mean, he's a doctor of philosophy. You know, he was a fighter pilot. Did you know?
Yes, I did.
And he spent 20 plus years inside the government. Did so many things in service to our country, and he's obviously a professor of history and politics at Morningside. I once quipped to him in an email that Sam, no offense, I hope you don't take it the wrong way, but you're kind of hidden here, a hidden treasure in Sioux City. I said, Are you in the witness protection program? I mean, just think of the size of the genius of the man. Yeah. And he is, of course, he's got a show. But, I mean, again, no offense to anybody in Siouxland at all. It's just, it is Siouxland, you know.
Yeah, he is a little pearl here in the rough, isn't he?
He really is. Yeah. Well, that's what I've got for now. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to get to our author, Dave Armstrong. And we will be talking about his book, The Pen of the Very Best. Is that what it's called? The Wisdom of Mr. Chesterton, The Very Best from the Pen of G.K. Chesterton. There's a lot there.
Yes.
All right. So it's John Paul the Great's Leaf Eaters Club. I'm John Lillis. She's Terry Moran. Back in the saddle after a short break. And we will be back with you thereafter. And thanks for being here today. God bless you and happy Friday.
Did you know that businesses from the entire tri-state area love Catholic Radio? Businesses like Joe's South Sioux Hardware, featuring everything you might imagine in a hardware store and more. Today's best Catholic Radio on channel 88.1 FM is grateful for the support of Joe's South Sioux City Hardware. 402-494-3477. 402-494-3477. Thanks for listening, and may God bless you.
Welcome to Schola Donum, the School of Giving, your source for straight thinking on stewardship and the best ways to give work, wisdom, and wealth for charitable purposes. Here's your host and founder of Schola Donum, Tom Cullinan.
Are you more likely to give when you might get a prize in return? We see these inducements all the time. It's the sale of raffle tickets and someone will win a vacation, a car, even a house. It's the lure of bargain hunters to the annual gala and auction. Sadly, someone who gives to charity or the church in the hope of winning something isn't involved in stewardship at all. He might feel better about giving to the church than to the lottery or to a casino, yet the transaction is exactly the same. While bingo, raffles, and even bake sales and spaghetti dinners can build up a community, they can actually interfere with stewardship. In the Mediterranean country of Malta, they have an annual fundraising television show for charity. Viewers that phone in their donations are offered attractive prizes. This irks Archbishop Joseph Mersica, who spoke in the Times of Malta, saying, "The beauty of the Christian value of charity was spoiled by ideas and initiatives that link charity with the lure of winning all sorts and forms of prizes." In Malta, fireworks often follow a fundraising dinner. In the Monsignor's words, "I am happy when I see less money and energy being spent on feasts that end up in smoke. The warmth of the love expressed through this assistance to the needy is stronger than that generated by all the fireworks in any feast." So have your fun with games of chance if you must, but being a good steward is the true prize we must seek.
Thanks for joining us today on Schola Donum. We welcome your comments and questions on stewardship. Please call us toll-free at 866-682-GIFT, and we'll be sure to mail you out a complimentary pamphlet with absolutely no obligation. Just call 866-682-4438. Remember, even the call is toll-free. Thanks for listening today, and God bless you.
It starts with a feeling, a small voice tugging at your heart. And as you go on, you see signs, so regular, that are saying to you, you're called to be a priest. It's really a calling of service and faith, not just to others, but to the person of Christ found in your neighbor. If you're experiencing these signs, call me at 712-233-7523 for a confidential talk. I'm Father Brad Pelzel, and I can help you read these signs.
Security National Bank is a proud sponsor of today's programming on Channel 88.1. More information regarding Security National Bank is on the web at www.snbonline.com.
Dear people of God, and welcome back to John Paul the Great's Leaf Eaters Club, right here on today's Best Catholic Radio, channel 88.1 FM. Terry Moran and John Lillis in studio. Terry, it's great to have you back after your hiatus, and I understand you were on the East Coast enjoying yourself.
And the West Coast.
Really? Where were you on the West Coast?
Went to L.A. to visit my daughter in L.A. and went to the East Coast of Philadelphia to a wedding, to my niece's wedding.
So you have a daughter in La La Land.
La La Land. That's what I John, call it. I want to tell you, those people think they have already died and gone to heaven. It is so beautiful out there. But it, and we went to Mass at Corpus Christi Church in Pacific Palisades for Pentecost Sunday. And it was just,
right?
Oh, it was beautiful. Just beautiful. An old Irish priest, John, you would have loved him.
I would have loved him.
He was from the old country and he had a wonderful accent.
From the old sod?
From the old sod. Really, my husband really enjoyed that Mass.
Now, of course, we're talking about Chesterton today.
We
are. Gilbert Keith. But in order to help us discuss that, we have all the way from the magic of telephone, the author of The Wisdom of Mr. Chesterton, the very best from the pen of G.K. Chesterton, a product of Thomas A. Nelson & Company, Tan Books. Let's welcome Dave Armstrong. Dave, good morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm very well. Better that you're on the radio with myself and Terry. Terry, say
hello. Good morning, Dave. I am so delighted to have you on the phone this morning. I've enjoyed reading so many of your books and your blog and your Facebook. Your comments on your Facebook. It's nice to have you here in Siouxland. And you're not too, you're not all that far from us up in Detroit, huh?
Yeah, I think I was actually, I don't know if I went through there or we were near there last year on our vacation.
You go straight up I-29.
Yeah, I know we went through Iowa, so.
Well, we're in Iowa. That counts.
You know, and a lot of people just go through it. But, you know, we have a beautiful shrine here. The next time you come through, Dave, you'll have to stop and see our Trinity Heights Queen of Peace. Beautiful shrine here, beautiful Divine Mercy Chapel, and, of course, the wonderful Trinity Heights Marian Center Bookstore, where we sell many of your wonderful books.
Wow, thank you.
Now, Dave, could you tell us a little bit about your background before we get into the Chesterton today?
Okay. I was raised as sort of a nominal Methodist, which didn't mean much to me at the time, and I got into paganism, and I was very secular when this was back in the 60s, early 70s, and eventually became an evangelical in 1977, so that's like 35 years now, and got into apologetics through being influenced by C.S. Lewis the most, and Francis Schaeffer, Josh McDowell, you probably know all those names, right?
Well, some of them.
Yeah, if you're
we got you at C.S. Lewis. The other ones went a little bit over my head there. But I'll be honest about it.
That's good. So then I was actually an apologist as a Protestant, going to college campuses and trying to share the faith. And so that went through the 80s, and eventually I became a Catholic through the influence of pro-life movement and thinking about contraception and studying the 16th century, and then reading Cardinal Newman's Development of Doctrine. It was like those three factors were the sort of a 1-2-3 punch of that made me become a Catholic, which was 1990.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, praise God.
And was there any one particular person that was influential, I mean, that you would talk to one-on-one that helped you along your conversion process?
Oh, yeah. Personally, that would be these two friends of mine that I met in the pro-life rescue movement named John and Lino. They were just here last week. As a matter of fact, they had a discussion. But I had these discussions at my house, call them ecumenical discussions, that were begun when I was a Protestant. And there's two Catholics and about 12 Protestants or so. So the funny thing is that I was convinced before that year was out to become a Catholic by these two friends because they offered what I thought were plausible answers to all my questions, because I was giving them a hard time, you know. So I was asking all these questions and exasperating them, and eventually John directed me to Cardinal Newman. Then I read that book, and it just floored me, and I thought, I can't even argue against this. I won't even try to argue. So I just sort of gave up, you know, by God's grace, of course.
And so were you married at the time? Was your wife Catholic? Or how does your family come into this process?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I had been married 6 years. My wife, Judy, was raised Catholic, but she started going to a singles group at Assemblies of God where I was going. So in God's providence, that's how we met. And she was never anti-Catholic, nor was I. So by God's grace, at the time in 1990, when I was becoming convinced God was apparently working on her, because we didn't talk about it much, when I eventually told her, hey, I changed my mind on contraception, she said, oh, yeah, I feel the same way, too. So that was really cool how that worked. We didn't have children yet, either. So first child was born the next year, so it was like all in time so they could be raised Catholic.
And then did you and your wife and the baby all come into the church at the same time?
Yeah, so she returned. It would be February 91 with Father John Harden. And
oh, my gosh. Now that is, talk about a gifted priest for the church.
Yeah, he may be a saint one day. So
right.
It was great. I got to meet him at these meetings he would have, and so I knew him, and he even wrote in my first book a foreword. And so the funny thing, we went through the marriage ceremony, and my wife was like 7 months pregnant, so this huge belly, and we're going through the whole wedding thing. So people chuckled about that.
Well, you've got some interesting stories to tell your family, don't you, John or Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah, and your story is in Surprised by the Truth. Is that Jeff Caven's book? Is that correct? Patrick Madrid. Yeah, Patrick Madrid. Yeah.
I think Caven's contributed.
Oh, okay. So we've got your conversion story and Surprised by the Truth. So if anybody wants to know more about this wonderful apologist conversion to the Catholic faith, it is in Surprised by the Truth, and that both volumes of it is available up at the Marion Center.
That's a nice little background and biography, and he's also got a little bit of that for us for G.K. Chesterton.
Yes.
Who I didn't know was Gilbert Keith, by the way.
You never knew his name, John?
I never bothered to ask what G.K. stood for.
You didn't want to know
if
you never... Interesting.
I could be J.L., but, you know, he's G.K., you know.
Yeah. Well, tell us, you know, Dave, with all of these books that you have written, it's, you know, so many of them are... Would you call them apology books? Because it's biblical evidence for Catholicism, the one-minute apologist. And now you shifted gears a little bit and wrote this book on the wisdom of Chesterton. What intrigued you about Chesterton to kind of shift gears and put this book together?
Well, I mean, he's still an apologist, so it's
right.
Not that different. But I guess I like all these great English writers. I mentioned Newman already.
Mm-hmm.
C.S. Lewis has been my favorite author for 30 years now. So Chesterton sort of fits into that English thing, Catholic and Anglican.
Yeah. Now, weren't G.K. and C.S., weren't they pals?
I don't think...
I thought they were at least wrote to one another. Or were they
I'm not sure about that. I know that The Everlasting Man, Lewis said, was like the main book that influenced him to become a Christian.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they wrote... That's a good question. I should look that up. But Chesterton died in 1936, and Lewis was sort of coming into prominence about 1933, so...
Maybe they
missed
each other.
There wouldn't have been much time there, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Dave, give us a little bit of the biography and background about G.K. Chesterton, because I'm sure there are many of our listeners out here in Siouxland who... you know, they maybe watch a little bit of a segment or so on EWTN or hear a little bit of something on the Catholic radio, but don't have much of the background on why G.K. Chesterton is so prominent in the Catholic faith and why he is timeless.
Well, I for the biography, he was born in 1874, and I believe he grew up in this sort of Fabian socialism was in vogue at the time in England. And sort of a secular Anglican family. And eventually he started thinking about, like, his book Orthodoxy, which is a really good introduction to read. He says he searched all, it's like a allegory, he said, I searched all around the world and I wound up in my own backyard, you know, like the truth was right under his nose in Anglican Orthodoxy. And so he went on this quest, I don't know if he went through spiritualism or, it was around him anyway at the time in England, and he came around full circle to traditional Christianity, not Catholic yet. And so that's really, I don't know a whole lot of details, but that's the gist of it.
Very cool.
And he is said to be the best writer of the 20th century. He said something about everything, and he said it better than anybody else. And another little quote I have here is that he was no mere wordsmith. He was very good at expressing himself, but more importantly, he had something very good to express, and I'm sure you concur with that.
Oh, yeah. I think it's a combination. Chesterton, he has all these elements in his writing: wisdom, common sense, whimsy and wit, optimism, a deep faith, and he's very congenial. And it just appeals to people, the style of it and the humor, you know, and the wisdom that he has is really extraordinary. And we see that in the TV show with Dale Alquist.
Yeah, he's done a tremendous job of bringing Chesterton to the forefront, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Now, have you ever appeared on a panel with Dale Alquist and the two of you kind of just go at it about Chesterton? And because I think the two of you would be quite a combination.
Yeah, well, I don't really do TV. I do some radio, like today. But he actually interviewed me. I have it on my site. It was an interview that's in Gilbert magazine that they put out. So that was really fun. Cause that's what I like. I like interviews, you know, spoken and written. So that was a lot of fun.
Well, and tell us, Dave, what you think makes Chesterton such a timeless read. You know, they say about Bishop Sheen that anything any of his TV shows, if you watch them now, they could almost have been recorded today. You know, he was just timeless. And so many of our wonderful apologists and priests and authors are timeless. And G.K. Chesterton is definitely at the top of that list. What makes him such a timeless person?
Well, it'd be all the elements I mentioned, I think, but also because I believe being what's called a popularizer, which Lewis was, and usually the most influential apologists are not academics, or they're not in theology, like Lewis was an English professor. And Thomas Howard today, English professor. Peter Kraft is a philosophy professor. Now, Chesterton didn't have any degree at all. It's sort of a interesting thing about him.
He never even went to college, did he, Dave?
He might have taken like a couple art courses or something, but I know he didn't have a degree. Yet he's considered the most influential apologist in the first third of the 20th century. I think it's because of style. It's because of sincerity and heartfelt belief. And because he was writing to the common man, which has always been sort of a guide for me, that, you know, I'm a popularizer myself because I don't have any degree in theology, not even a single course at a college. But I've learned a lot on my own, and I try to write to the common man and the masses, so to speak.
And you do it so well, Dave. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
So, in other words, maybe in about 20 years from now, we will be having the wit and wisdom of Dave Armstrong. We'll be interviewing someone, huh?
Yeah, I'll probably get more royalties after I'm dead
than you will now. Yeah,
like Schubert or something. Yeah. No one. Well, whatever. I do what I love, so that's
important, and that's very important. And before we get into this, a little more deeper into the book, though, Dave, I do want you to let us know. Could you tell our readers about your blog? Is it Socrates Blogs? What is the exact web address of that?
Yeah, that would be Socrates58.blogspot, or I think you can get to it by biblicalcatholic.com. It's called Biblical Evidence for Catholicism.
Okay, or they probably could even Google Dave Armstrong, right?
Yeah, I think if you put my name, I have like 2,500 posts, so it's pretty easy to get to it.
Yeah, and then you have, I noticed on your website there, now, I'm not trying to put down my bookstore because I do have these books, you know, in the bookstore. But you know, this show is broadcast and people do pick it up on the Internet who are not right here in Siouxland because the publisher's website puts it out and your website. Tell our listeners how, because you're running some kind of specials where you could purchase so many of your books and you've got quite a program going there with your book sales.
Yeah, well, the deal that I do is for ebooks, and it's ePubs, which is the latest rage now that can be read on handheld devices.
Oh, like an iPad and Kindle and all that. Uh huh.
All of those, which I don't even own, but I'm trying to reach that market. So it's EPUB and PDF, and I have 15 of my books out of 31 now, and that's available on my site. If you go, if you get to my webpage, go to the top right on the sidebar, and I think the second icon down, it says 15 books, and it's $29.95, which is dirt cheap.
What a great value.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, do you also sell your own books on your website, too? Because, as you said, what do you have, 31 books that you have penned now?
Yeah. Well, I don't sell them directly from my house, except I just do this ebook thing because that's all automated. I don't have to do anything. People just order it. And so the rest of them, I just provide links to the different ways to buy it, different publishers and or ebook or paperback and so forth. So I have one page with all the books on them.
So for our listeners, you could go Google Dave Armstrong or Socrates58.blogspot, and you could get the ebooks. If you would like to contact the Marion Center, we also do special orders and mail of Dave's books. Just go on the TrinityHeights.com website, and my email is there, and I will be glad to send you any and all of Dave's books that you're interested in, and he is quite a prolific author. So, our prolific author, shall we get back to the wisdom of Mr. Chesterton?
Sure.
And tell us a little bit about the format. The exact title is The Wisdom of Mr. Chesterton, The Very Best Quotes, Quips, and Cracks from the Pen of G.K. Chesterton. You know, Dave, you don't want to read that title after you've had a glass or two of wine,
yeah,
do you?
Yeah, I was going to say it five times real fast.
Yes, she sells seashells by the seashore, huh? Yeah. So tell us a little bit, because this format, you've got it in various topics and so many wonderful, wonderful quotes, and I wouldn't dare ask you to pick your favorite. I don't know how you could. But tell us how you came up with this format.
Well, it's just, I think it's from the process of collecting. I love to collect and organize, so you see that on my website with all the stuff on there.
Yeah.
How it's organized. That's sort of my personality or whatever that's called, some kind of personality group or whatever, but I like to collect thoughts of people. So basically I started reading his books, and they're all online, so that's easy to do it, and it's easy to cut and paste into a book, so I had to type very little of that. And just as I collected it, I tried to find the best description of each one, like what category it would fit under most accurately, and that's all there was to it. So it has maybe 200 categories. Let me read some here. Resurrection, Revelation, Revolution, Robes, Clerical, Romanticism, the Sabbath, Sacramentalism, Saints. So that's an idea of the type of categories. It's about 200 to 250, I think.
And how many quotes did you actually have to pick out and eliminate and decide to put into the book to make it readable?
Yeah, I don't know the number of it, but it runs about 370 pages. Each one is like one sentence. That was the method that I came up with. They would be one sentence and have a general application, almost like a proverb in Proverbs in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And each one is sort of a complete idea or thought. So I went through his books. I didn't do the fiction books, so that's one thing about it.
You did nothing with Father Brown.
No, I don't really read fiction much myself.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a deficiency I have. But I just went through them, and some of them are, I think they're still under copyright, like Everlasting Man from 1925. It's not quite public domain yet, so I was limited in how many quotes I could get from those books.
And did it take you years to do this? Did you set out to just do this and get this finished? Or is this a project you decided to do and then put away and write another one of your books and then go back to this? How did all of this play into your life with all of your other writings?
I think it took about maybe 3 months, 4 months.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, well, you're going through these books online, and I don't know. It's almost like I can speed read when I'm looking for things, because you're not reading per se, but you're sort of on the lookout for good quotes. And I seem to read pretty fast when I do that. I actually read pretty slow when I'm just reading a book. So it didn't take long. Actually, I did one recently on John Wesley. I was trying to get into a Protestant market more. And that took only a month. I was just reading all these books.
Now, why did you decide to do a book on John Wesley?
Well, Wesley, I've always considered him the Protestant that I admire the most, because he has his zeal as a missionary. He preached like 40,000 sermons, and it's estimated that he rode on horseback 250,000 miles in over 50 years. So I always admired that as an apologist myself. And he's not that far from Catholic, really. He was an Anglican his whole life. He didn't leave the Anglican church. So that's basically it. My background is Methodist originally, and my theology was Wesleyan and Arminian as a Protestant. So
interesting. So that was just a little aside, like, here.
Yeah. It's not as far as Calvinism. It's closer to us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Dave, what are your thoughts about, and I don't know if this is a silly question or not, but when we have addressed this a little bit, do you think that Chesterton is too intellectual for the Catholic in the pew?
No, I don't think so. He doesn't use that many big words. I think it's the opposite. He writes in a style that could be understood by most people, you know, certainly with a high school education. So I wouldn't say he's too intellectual.
Yeah, and
I just wonder, he didn't go to college and all
right.
that, it helps him not to be, you know.
Yeah, I just wonder that because, you know, I've had this bookstore up there at the Shrine for 20-some years, and there are not a lot of requests for Chester. You know, maybe, as you said, the, you know, Orthodoxy or the Father Brown Mysteries and occasionally Everlasting Man, but there's not a real, I'd say, overwhelming request for books on Chesterton. And with a man who has written as prolifically as he has, you wonder why. And I don't know if it's, are people afraid to approach his writings because they think he's too intellectual, or maybe it's just ignorance on their part?
Yeah, I don't know. It could be just not being aware of him. You know, you go through life and you don't, a lot of times you're not aware of certain authors and thoughts. So if he's just made more,
put them on the top
accessible.
Shelf? Just put it on the top
yeah.
shelf. Yeah, there you go. Okay. Well, I am hoping that today's Leaf Feeders Club, an interview with you, does bring him up to the forefront in Siouxland. And I think what you are doing with your writings and with your blog spots and what Dale Alquist is doing certainly is bringing Chesterton up to the forefront.
Well, I hope to make his thought more known. You know, that's in all my books. Like, I have one about Newman, too, that's coming out with his quotes.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to, because these people are great men, and I've been influenced personally by them, I want to share that with other people. That's the whole idea, is to share it. Share
exactly.
The good
thing. Exactly. And two giants you have here with Chesterton and Newman, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I see John here has this book wide open. He has stopped listening to us and is reading.
Well,
so I think he's got a quote here or two he wants to.
Pardon me.
What have you got there, John?
I was attempting to glean something so obviously Chesterton that everyone would know. This is so jam-packed with everything that I just, for the sake of argument, we're on a talk show, so I went to Talkers.
Oh, okay.
And, all right. Talkers, okay.
Yeah, and this is a quote from this section of the book. It says, "It is an entire mistake, for instance, to imagine that the man who monopolizes conversation is a conceited fellow."
You have to pause for a minute and then just digest that a little bit, right, John?
You really do. And I guess there's hope for me yet.
Well, there's exceptions to every rule, too. So.
Well, it also continues to say, "The man who talks too much because he is interested in his subject."
Interesting. Interesting.
So there you go. I'm protected on two clauses.
You are. We're going to keep
yeah,
you,
think
John.
It's positive. It's pretty much positive thoughts there.
Yeah, very positive. Yeah. I like it. I'm going to have to, they need to make this in a pocket form. Because, you know, anytime you're out with the lads, you need to be able to quote Chesterton.
Oh, this
well,
is
it
true.
Is. It is available on, I think it's Barnes & Noble Nook Books. And
oh, well, see, I can get it on my smartphone, Chesterton, at any time.
Yeah, I think
there you go.
Kindle, too.
Yeah. I just have to, like you, Dave, I have to come into the 22nd century and get a tablet, or the 21st, whichever one we're in.
Yeah, my son has one, but I don't have one.
Yeah. If I need help with my computer, I'd ask my 12-year-old daughter.
Well, I'm just an old book person myself. I have to have a book that I have to highlight and turn the pages down.
Turn the leaves of the book.
Yes, I have to have a book.
I love the books.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah, and I tell you, Dave, my husband and I have to, if there are favorite books that we have, we each have to have our own copy. He cannot read a book after I've mangled it and highlighted it. And he said it's too distracting. So he usually gets the book first, and then I do my whatever I have to do on them.
That's like being in college where you have to highlight and remember everything.
Yeah, and I don't. What do these college kids do with Kindles now? I mean, you know, you've got to rip through a book and turn the pages, but it's a that's a whole nother show, Dave.
They designed the interface so you actually physically have to turn the pages, and they have audio sounds of the paper on there, too.
Oh, interesting.
Now,
You
know, Chesterton had no formal education, but didn't he write for like 130, 40 magazines almost, or publications almost simultaneously?
Yeah, it was a lot. Illustrated London News, he wrote an article and different things, all kinds of different magazines. He was a journalist by profession, actually.
Oh, yeah, kind of like Karl Marx, interestingly enough.
He just writes. Malcolm Muggeridge was another journalist. These guys know how to communicate. I think that's why they appeal, because at least certain journalists, you know, there's bad ones too, but they know how to write with style and flair, and I think that's a key to. You have to have the ideas and be orthodox, and you also have to have a style in order to appeal to people, so.
Yeah, and as a fan of Newman, he could develop ideas. One time I remember reading that he was in favor of socialism. As you mentioned, he grew up under the Fabians Socialist Society.
Yeah.
But later he developed, you know, an understanding of it that was quite different. And, you know, and that just goes to his authenticity, I think, Terry, that, you know, you can say one thing on one day and over the course of several years form a more informed, developed opinion. And then share that. I mean, it takes a lot of humility to be able to do that.
Yeah, and he did possess a lot of humility. And, you know, John and Dave, I think, you know, we're talking about the 22nd century and these kids, you know, and young people with their Kindles and tablets and smartphones and all. But don't you think, Dave, I mean, I am just so impressed with the knowledge that I myself, a computer illiterate, glean from like your Blogspot, your Facebook page, and so many of the wonderful apologists that are coming out today, and you know, Brandon Vogt, so many of these young people who have families and are trying to support their families and yet are spreading the faith. They're such tremendous evangelists and so humble and bold with their blogs and websites. I mean, it's very impressive to me as an old grandma here to be able to tap into your brain, you know, through these various avenues.
Well, I think the Internet is, I've always said it's tailor-made for the Catholic faith, because especially in the aspect of how our doctrines and moral views, they're all interconnected with each other. You can hardly talk about one thing without talking about something else, so. The Internet is works so well because you can have a link, you know, if you're writing about the real presence, you can link someone to something else that's related to it, worship style or whatever, or the Latin Mass and different forms of the Mass. And I love that.
Yeah,
I love that from the beginning when it was like 1996 when I got online. I said, boy, this is really going to be something to use all this technology.
Yeah, it's a tremendous tool for evangelization, and it's a tremendous tool to hopefully touch the lives of young people. Before we let you go, we have about
5 minutes or so.
Five more minutes here. Do you have a favorite story about Chesterton any particular story about him that you would want to share with our listeners?
I'm not a big storyteller, but there's a short thing I remember that he was very absent-minded, like a lot of geniuses. So apparently one time he was setting out on some kind of journey, and he got to one of the train stations, probably in London or wherever, where he lived, and he sent a telegram to his wife. He said, I'm in such and such station. Where am I supposed to be?
Oh. So typical of, yeah, the absent-minded professor, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was a character. It's like 6'4", probably weighed about 350 pounds. But he was sort of an eccentric. Everyone loved him, you know. There's another one. He used to debate George Bernard Shaw a lot, who was...
Now, he was an atheist, wasn't he?
Yeah, or
yeah.
Atheist.
Yeah.
So Chesterton said something to the effect of, Mr. Shaw is cruelly hampered by not being able to tell a lie unless he firmly believes it to be the truth. So
wow.
That they had this great relationship back and forth, which I try to have when I have atheists, you know, I'm talking to, try to be friendly and joke around, you know, to cut through all the seriousness sometimes.
Well, that's
so
true.
That's what he tried to do in his debates. He would have the other guy laughing, you know, and being charmed by him, which is a key to convincing a person.
Yeah, winning them over. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a specific book that you think would be appropriate to recommend to our listeners as a Chesterton beginner?
Yeah, well, that would have to be Orthodoxy. That's mm-hmm. the one that really gets to the basic, his basic thought and outlook. And any sort of Christian can read that because it's not Catholic yet.
Mm-hmm.
It was written in 1908, and he became a Catholic in 1922.
Interesting.
He was only Catholic for 14 years. It's not a very long time. But his mm-hmm. thought, like Newman and others that later convert, is very Catholic even before he's technically in the church. But mm-hmm. Orthodoxy is great for an introduction to, I would say, it's almost like an introduction to the idea of tradition and the church, you know, both those things, as opposed to simply Bible proofs. They're all important, and I specialize in the Bible myself, but tradition is super important for everyone to understand.
So we've got Orthodoxy and the wisdom of Mr. Chesterton.
The very best quotes, quips, and cracks from the pen of G.K. Chesterton.
So we've got two very special books to recommend here, Dave. And, you know, one thing, you know, I did want to bring up when you were talking about Chesterton not going to college. But for not being a college professor, he wrote the most preeminent book on St. Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah.
Now, how in the world does that come about? I read someplace where he had a secretary go to the library and get every book she could find on Thomas Aquinas. He looked at them, made her take them back, and then he just, wrote it off the top of his head?
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. I know that some of the leading Thomists have said that, they studied for years and years, but Chesterton distill the thought and the spirit of St. Thomas, which is really the goal of, I think, all apologetics is to, like Vatican II stressed, expressing the faith, being orthodox, but in the language of that people can understand, which goes back to St. Paul in the Bible. He says, I've become all things to all men, that by any means I may save some of them. So Chesterton, just reading on his own and learning about St. Thomas, somehow he captured the whole spirit of it. It's a wonderful book. I remember reading it and thinking, wow, this is, you know, I was glad I was reading that book instead of some dry academic thing.
Yeah. So that's one of the most acclaimed books by Thomistic scholars, correct? Chesterton,
yeah.
St. Thomas Aquinas?
Yeah, it is, because they'll say that he really nailed it and he understood St. Thomas.
Well, Dave, I hope this interview today has really inspired people to, I know they will come and pick up your book, and I will order more of Orthodoxy for them. But before we let you go, I have to do one kind of selfish thing here. One of my favorite books written by you, well, actually, I guess edited by you since it's biblical verses, is The Catholic Verses by Dave Armstrong. It's 95 Bible passages that confound Protestants, and it's an excellent scriptural proof for the truth of the Catholic faith, published by Sophia Press. And so we've got that available.
Very clever man, 95 verses. Of course, that was Martin Luther.
Yeah.
Well, I try to be a little provocative.
Well, you are a little and then
a provocateur,
tell us your new book. Your very new, hot off the press by Catholic Answers is 100, is it 101?
No, 100. Biblical Arguments Against Sola Scriptura.
And that's hot off the press, correct?
Yeah, that's right now. It's been actually number one on theology releases on Amazon for like new releases, and getting a lot of advertising from Catholic Answers, who's the publisher, which I appreciate because I haven't had a whole lot of that at times. So.
Yeah, no, that's great. Hey, I just have a brand new favorite Chesterton quote. Can I read it really quickly?
Yes.
It's on marriage. To put the matter in one metaphor, the sexes are two stubborn pieces of iron. If they are to be welded together, it must be while they are red hot.
That is from my Irish co-host, Dave.
I love it.
My favorite is under the category of wives.
Yeah.
Let me read this one.
All right.
A man's friend likes him but leaves him as he is. His wife loves him and is always trying to turn him into somebody else.
That's a truism.
Yeah, we will needlepoint that on a pillow this weekend, Dave.
Yep.
Dave, this has been such a delight talking to you today. I've been looking forward to this interview, and I hope you will keep us posted when your next book comes out, and you will come back on Blessed John Paul the Great Leaf Eaters Club.
Well, it's been my pleasure. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, thanks so much, Dave. Yeah, you're welcome, and God bless you, and stay in touch with we'll get you back for your new book as well.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks, and God bless, Dave.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Well, Terry, it's the end of another program.
It
one
is.
In the
Wasn't
can,
that
as they
fun,
say.
Though? Wasn't was that fun? I mean, and not a lot of people do enjoy Chesterton to his fullest.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're afraid to pick him up.
They might be.
Yeah, but I think this this wisdom of Mr. Chesterton is a great introduction to just, you know, get enthralled with some of his quotes. And so Dave Armstrong has done a wonderful thing for the Chesterton Society.
Yeah, and do we want to give away the books today?
We can give away. Yeah, and you know what? We could give away this one too, the Catholic Verse 95.
I don't think that one's going to make it out of the studio.
You I've got more at the Marion Center.
Right. The wisdom of Mr. Chesterton, any gift of what, $30 or more?
Sure. Mm-hmm. And bring
right
it down here, and that book is yours.
Yep.
So, and then also Catholic Verses by Dave Armstrong, one of my very personal favorites of his that I really enjoy.
So call us right now, 712-224-5342. If you'd like to have one of these books, just a gift of $30 or more to the radio station, we'll give it to you as a thank you gift.
Yes, we will.
Amen to that.
Amen to that. And everyone have a beautiful holy month of the Sacred Heart today on First Friday.
Le Sacre Coeur.
Yeah, very special month.
The two hearts.
Yeah.
When is the date for that?
Probably in the middle of the June, because isn't it after Corpus Christi? It's the Friday after Corpus Christi. So we've got about two more, probably around the 16th or so, 15th and 16th of June.
Are we going to do a Eucharistic procession in Siouxland?
We are not.
We should.
We should.
You get it.
And we also need to organize something for this fortnight for freedom that the Catholic bishops.
I meant to mention that. Yeah, thanks for reminding me. Larry Walsh was down yesterday. The bishop has a great article in the newspaper today.
Okay,
he's
in the Globe.
Everybody to go. In fact, I've got it.
Okay.
Right
it's
here.
June 21st to July 4th, is it?
June 21st through the 4th of July.
Yeah.
But the Fortnight 24th for freedom. Is a big event at Trinity Heights on the 24th. And then the bishop has a kickoff for the fortnight, noon mass at Cathedral, Thursday, June 21st. So join the bishop for that.
Noon mass at Cathedral, June 21st.
Yeah. And then there's, anyway, pick up the Globe today. It's got all that in it.
And we're praying for religious freedom.
Well, actually, we want to pray to restore the republic, reject socialism, and the emerging fascism of the current regime.
Very sad. Very sad state of affairs we are in, and we need a lot of prayer and sacrifice.
Yes, and I'm very saddened, as you are, by the results of the Gallup poll of Catholics and Morality that came out last week. 82% of those surveyed think that the pill is morally acceptable, and don't understand what the church is making a big deal about.
What does Gallup know?
Well, that's true. I'm just saying that
I know that it is a poll, and it is a respected poll. But who was he interviewing? Who were they interviewing too?
Yeah, self-identified.
They're not interviewing the people in the pew. The fides census.
Did I get it
backwards? I told you my Latin is not very good, John.
You know,
census fideum. Yes.
The sense of the faithful.
Yes.
Well, right. I mean, if you go to noon mass and ask that question, obviously
you would get
a different
result. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, look, we're right up at 10 o'clock.
It's
KFHC, Channel 88.1. It's John Paul the Great's Leaf Eaters Club. What a nice program.
It was.
And
thank you, John.
We'll be back next week. Is that right?
Yes, we will be. Kelly Walquist, All Hearts of Fire parish-based program. Tune in.
And if you want the books, $30 or more as a thank you gift, you'll get one, The Wit and Wisdom of Mr. Chesterton or the Catholic Verses. 712-224-5342. Call for those books, and we'll get them to you.
God bless, John.
Yep, God bless you, and we'll get back into programming already in progress. You'll probably hear a little bit of Women of Grace live. God bless, everybody.